Hello, Kieran, my old friend. I've come to host with you again.
To come to talk about music again. Bonjour, Graham.
Hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Weather's good today.
Yeah, it's been a nice one, hasn't it? Been sat in the garden. Did some social distancing, me and my parents.
Some social distortion.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a nice little social distance get together, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. It sounds really seedy when you say it like that.
A socially distanced garden party.
It's nice, wasn't it? Because we haven't actually met each other since the, well, we, I mean, we have met each other, but we haven't actually seen each other in person the whole time we've been doing this podcast. So
It was cool, and the dogs got to meet, which was the most important thing.
that is the most important thing. Dwight
No
and
dog
Luna.
got killed or bitten or hurt.
No. Yeah,
So.
and considering Luna's like five times the size of little Dwight, that's pretty impressive, I think.
It made me laugh how he could just pretty much fit underneath there.
Yeah, it's like it's like an IKEA storage solution. Everything just fits nicely inside.
It is, yeah. It's like Jenga blocks or something. Not
Yeah,
Jenga blocks. I'm thinking of Tetris, not Jenga.
that's the one.
Same
Tetris.
thing. Exciting week this week.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we got a. Yeah, actually, before we get on to our guest, should we talk about our adventures in Facebook advertising? Because I feel like we need to chat about that.
Marketing expert, too old for this pit. Our
Yeah.
marketing team set a very, very good paid advertisement on Facebook.
Yeah, so we paid to boost our 4 year strong episode where we chatted to Alan and Dan from the band. And I mean, when I say we paid to boost, like, neither of us are a wealthy men.
Well, one of us isn't.
Wait, who's wealthy?
I'm wealthy. Bare money.
You don't come off that
It's just there's a minus in front of it on my bank statement.
way.
Anyway, carry on.
Oh. Yeah, so we basically put like a little bit of money behind that Facebook post to boost it, and we've had loads of likes off it. We've had like 180 odd likes, but the issue seems to be that the majority of the people liking it look like they're in their 80s. Lots of Marthas, lots of Ethels, bless them. I don't know if they're into 4 years strong. We're trying to figure out where we've gone wrong.
Well, I think the issue came from the fact that I set up this advert and I thought, oh, do you know what? Let's make it as broad as possible because literally anyone can be into,
Of
punk,
course,
metal,
again.
hardcore, whatever. But I set the age range as 18 to 65. And I think the fact that we have got too old in our name is maybe attracting the 65 plus demographic.
Yeah, but I mean, if they do like it, that's awesome. Shout out to the older people who are getting down to, pop punk music that has breakdowns in it. That's pretty sweet. But yeah, we got some other engagement, didn't we? We got two comments on our post, both of which are fantastic.
50% of them were trolls.
I don't even know. I think the old lady was trolling us as well, to be fair.
Oh yeah, the old lady said we had nice pictures on the 4 year strong one, which was a picture of like Donna and chips and a social distance gig or something like that. She thought they were great.
And a Christmas tree.
And then we had the Edge
Great.
Lord.
Yeah, we had a guy comment with a picture of I mean, it looked like a meme. It wasn't a meme because that wasn't funny, but it said you it had a picture of a dog doing a shit, and the caption said, "You paid Facebook to shit on my news feed, and now I'm returning the favor." But we were saying earlier the jokes on this guy, really, because, well, not only do we love everyone and all kinds of interactions, and we will win him over, but also he's commented on our post, which is what we paid for, and the picture is a dog pooping, which we do discuss in the first few minutes of that episode. So
But really, but you have to select whether you want comments or likes or messages, and I think I put comments. So really, it worked.
yeah, thank you for commenting, appreciate it.
Big up with the troll.
But yeah, not everyone's a troll though. I think it is worth saying as well, this week we had a message on Instagram from a guy called Mason, who is a US citizen but now lives in Barbados, telling us that he listens to the show, which is really cool.
Yeah,
Shout out
awesome.
to Mason in Barbados.
Nice one. So Mason, this week for you, just for you, we've got a very special interview.
Yeah, we do. This is actually this is our third guest now, isn't it? And we've lucked out. We were saying earlier, like, we've lucked out. Everyone we've had on has been fantastic, and we enjoyed this chat no less. Gordon Morrison from Raging Speedhorn, and yeah, he's just a bloody nice bloke, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was cool because obviously we brought him on to chat about Speedhorn, but we ended up hearing some of the really cool stories from being on tour with Slipknot and Rammstein and Mudvayne. It was really cool. Yeah. A really, really nice guy as well. So yeah, nice one, Gordon.
Yeah, and I think everyone else will enjoy this too. So this is episode 5 of Two Off This Pit, Gordon Morrison from Raging Speedhorn.
So welcome to Too Old for This Pit, episode 5. Today we're super excited. We've got Gordon Morrison on with us, who is part of a band who have played a massive part in the UK metal scene for over 20 years now.
Yeah, Gordon is drummer for UK sludgecore veterans Raging Speedhorn. Gordon, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're getting by, aren't we?
Yeah, slowly but surely. Yeah, we've just been having a bit of a chat with Gordon about the excitement of lockdown and how everything is just grinding to a halt, and it's a bit of a double-edged sword because it's quite nice to be at home, but it's also not very nice to not be earning money. So how have you been keeping busy in lockdown?
Well, I've got a daughter who's like 2.5, come up to 3, so she's just crazy. She's a crazy little monster, so she keeps me on my toes a lot of the time. But yeah, not really doing much, to be fair. Doing stuff to the house, which we never get to do, so that's
boring. Oh, you've actually got around to doing that.
Well, sort of. I mean, it took me a while to get my arse in gear, but I will start something and then it will probably won't finish for ages. But having a small kid sort of takes a lot of your time up.
Yeah. Well, I'm the same. Like, we've got a tiny bit of glossing to do in the house, like literally probably, I don't know, like a 2 square foot, and I've still not done it after 3 months.
I've got the same as you. I've got a son who's just turned 3.
Oh, no way.
But we've both been working still, me and my wife, and obviously nursery's been closed.
Yeah.
So we've just been like 2 hours on, 2 hours off, but went back to nursery last week, and it was both kind of an amazing relief and actually a little bit sad. Which is not what I was saying for the 2 months prior to that.
It's strange because, like, we only live sort of 10 minutes away from her, from Daisy's nursery. And it's really sad because when you walk past, she's like, it's closed. And she just gets really sad. And I'm like, it's okay. But you can just sort of tell now. She's like, I'm bored of yous two now. I want to go see my friends, you know. But to be honest with you, she's more excited about seeing her grandparents on Skype or whatever. She is hanging out with us now.
Yeah. But
she's 2 in August. So, you know, she's just like, she don't want to hang out with us. She wants to go and hang out with other people, you know.
Yeah.
It's fair enough. Because she's usually around a lot of other people all the time. So I suppose just having me and her mum, she's like, I'm fucking bored of yous now. Which is cool.
I thought you have to wait for them to be teenagers for them to say you're not cool, but obviously we're experiencing it about 13 years too early.
Oh, mate, it's just like...
These are unprecedented times.
It's so kind of like, today I had the guitar on, and she just comes in and goes, turn it down, Dad. I'm like, what are you on? Like, your master, your daughter. Get into this, because it's always going to be here, so...
I was just listening to you guys on YouTube the other night, and I was playing the new song, Snakebite, and it was time to make Logan's tea, so I like turned it off halfway through, and he started crying. He was like, put it back on, I'm trying to play guitar. That was it.
Amazing.
Well into it.
You are molding him into like a proper little metal fan though, aren't you?
Oh, it's awful. Like, I feel like I've already failed as a parent. Like, he asks for Slipknot on the smart speaker. It's really not good. It's obviously been compounded by Kieran buying him a Slipknot t-shirt for his birthday the other week.
That's amazing.
I don't know how I'm going to explain that nursery.
Yeah. I had a few choices and I thought just go in the deep end and get a Slipknot one.
Why not? Yeah, she's got a Zeppelin top. That's all she's got, and a Nirvana top. But
nice.
She's more into, like, it's really weird. She loves, like, the Beatles and stuff like that. She's just more into jingly jangly stuff, which is cool. I mean, got to start somewhere. But heavier stuff, she's like, nah, fuck that.
But, maybe when your dad's in it, you know, in a metal band, maybe that's like metal is uncool.
Yeah, you got to rebel, haven't you?
Yeah, well, she came to see us play at 2000 Trees a couple of years ago. She must have been only one or so, something. And I thought, she's going to hate it. She ain't going to have because she's got to wear hearing aids anyway. Because she's
right.
So I was like, oh, she's going to hate it. Because, like, obviously everyone who sees her in the band are like, hey, like, oh, it's nice. And then we get on stage and it's like angry and all that stuff. And she loved it. She was just waving at everybody. I took her on stage afterwards and she's like, yeah, it's really weird how people are going, oh, it's nice, finally nice to see Daisy. I'm like, how do these people know who she is? But it's probably because I put a lot of pictures up of her. So that's probably why. But
was that 2000 Trees 2018?
Yeah.
We've been laughing about this. Obviously, this podcast is about us being too old to go to gigs and having bad backs and so on.
Just falling to bits.
And I was at 2000 Trees that year, and I wanted to come down and see you guys, but I ended up, I had to stay at the tent. I think I had that much to drink and we stood up for too long that my back hurt and my feet hurt. And I was like, Raging Speedrunner on now. And I was like, I need to have a rest. So it was kind of like, I said to Graham, it was like, you know, a kid in a sweet shop that's not allowed to go in staring at the window.
Yeah.
I was sat at the tents and I could hear you playing. I was just like, I'm just in too much pain. I've got to have a rest. So I had to sit there for an hour. And just...
I think that was like the last, one of the last shows we did with like that lineup, I think.
Yeah.
I think it was, yeah. Which was quite weird because I sort of knew that was sort of like coming, that sort of was coming to the end, which is quite sad. But... It was one of them things, but our guitarist Jim, he's like 5 years older than us. He's like he's such an old man, and he'll go he'll go hard, and then he'll be like out of it for days. That gig, I could see it. I was like, you don't want to be here.
But I miss the days when you know you're 15 or whatever. You're at a festival, you'll be down the front, and you'll be stood there. 12 hours, you won't have a drink, you won't have anything to eat, and you'll be fine the next day. Whereas there, you stand up for an hour and have like two beers and you've got to go and lie down.
It's quite, I'll tell you what, that's probably one of my favourite festivals to go to be fair.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
Even though like a lot of the bands I'm not really, like, well, there's a few bands I'm not really into and stuff, but like, I just like the atmosphere of it. Everyone's just really nice. You know?
Yeah. I like the fact that you can walk from your tent to the stage without having to go through security or walk for 3 miles. That was really cool. Or not go to the tent in my case. If I was
to be fair, I'm it's so funny because when I go to festivals, I always go, oh, I want to see this band, and I just never do it.
Yeah.
Like, especially if we're playing, I'm like, the last thing I want to do now, usually because I'm quite pissed, I'm like, I can't be miles away. I'm not going all the way over there.
Yeah. Well, but I remember watching the driving headline, and I remember being stood there and I was like, this is awesome. But like, about 40 minutes in, I was like, this is really good. I'm really enjoying myself, but I feel like I need to sit down.
Yeah. I tell you what, then at the drive-in, when we played 2000 Trees, I was so disappointed with it.
Yeah.
Because they were just like, you know, they just stood there like they didn't really give a fuck.
Yeah. And I mean, I suppose, I never saw them back in the day. That was, well, I've seen them twice actually, but only like, you know, recently, last few years. But yeah, I've seen a few videos and, you know, old videos where they're like throwing the guitars around like it's nothing.
Yeah. Well, I seen Refused a few years ago, and they were still exactly the same. They were just going nuts, and I was
absolutely crackers.
Even though like you're older, you should still give it.
Yeah.
100%.
You can't, like, to me, if we got like that and we can do it, I'd just be like, we ain't doing this anymore, because it's not fair on people who are paying to come and see you.
And it's weird, isn't it? Because like the correlation with the music between like, you know, like bands like Refuse, not the drive-in, like I just can't imagine someone just like half-arsing it when your music sounds that full on. Like, it just seems weird.
It's like seeing like Dillinger coming back in a couple of years time and just them just standing there doing nothing and just playing
for their acoustic tour.
What's going on, you know? You would though, wouldn't you? You used to be like, because you're so used to that, like, that image of what they're supposed to be like.
Yeah.
think really, I couldn't ever imagine that happening, but.
I've seen them once. I think I was about 15 and I didn't know what was happening. I was watching them like, I was actually frightened. But then looking back, like, fucking hell, that was really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. We played with them at Reading Festival. I think that was the first time we ever played with them. Hmm. And I was like, because they were like first on main stage.
Was that the infamous year?
Yeah, and then like we were second on. That was such a good year because then it was like them. It was them, us, Amen, and then like 100 Reasons, which are all like our friends.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amen.
That's cracking.
You know, but like that was the first time I'd seen him and I was like, fuck, these are crazy.
Yeah. And to play that technical and be going that sick, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
They must mime.
Well, that's what I thought, but they don't.
Actually, I'll delete that out when we edit this because I don't want anyone to hear me say that.
That's
such a good combo though of like bands like Amen, who I can't remember the last time I listened to him, and then you guys and 100 Reasons. That's like a proper spectrum of
Well, like 100 Reasons, like we've known them like since, well, when both our bands started, we used to do a lot of shows together all the time. Like, so I've known them for so long because Andy from 100 Reasons is playing bass for Speedall now. He's been in the band for like a year and a half now.
I didn't actually know that because I knew Larry produced before the sea was built, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's why like he did that, because we've just known him for so long. Sort of asked him for a favor and he said yeah, we'll do it. But Andy sort of came in, because he sort of sniffed that something was happening with the band and like people were leaving. He wanted to come in playing guitar and I was like, no way, you're a good bass player. And then sort of I asked him if he would, I think we had like a couple of festivals, and he said, I'm not joining, I'll come and help. And I was like, yeah, okay. And then he did one festival and he's like, I want to join. I was like, okay. So, but it's good because like that's the thing with Speedrun is, even though people have come and left, everybody who's come in the band have always been are really good friends.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone could just come in this band. You need to, like, we're a bit of a weird bunch anyway, so it's like you've sort of got to get where we're coming from, you know, especially me and Frank, because we come from the same town. It's quite a strange place, and it's the way we are. If you don't get it, you just don't get it, you know. You know,
I was going to ask you about Corby actually, because I remember the first, like, when we first, this must have been so long ago. It was right around the time of the first album coming out, and I remember reading there was a lot of stuff about kind of you guys coming from Corby, and I got to be honest, it just sounded really depressing. And I kind of, it resonated with me a little bit because I'm from Middlesbrough, and that's
okay,
a steel,
yeah,
industrial town as well. And I just remember reading all these. Did that have any effect on the kind of music? This kind of, I suppose, this bleak industrial landscape that you.
Well, it's just it was a bit of a, because there was nothing like there was not a train station to get into the next town, which was Kettering. Like, you had to drive really to go anywhere. You know, it's like, I remember not a few years ago, I mean, it's had a big renovation now and it's quite a nice town, to be fair, to live in. But like, obviously, because I haven't lived there since I was 20. Right. So I moved to Cardiff I moved around a bit and then I moved to Cardiff. So I haven't lived there. So it's really weird for me because I noticed the changes quite a lot. But as a kid, we didn't have a cinema. We didn't have nothing. There was literally nothing. And it was just like, it's just a rough town, you know?
Yeah.
Like a lot of murders and all that sort of kind of crazy shit.
Did that make you turn to music then, the fact there was nothing to do, or was it already something you loved? Or?
It was just like, I don't really, I sort of like, I hated school, and it, like, the only thing, I sort of started getting into like Nirvana and stuff like that, and like Tony and John, who used to be in Speedall, we started just doing a little thing, got a band together, and me and Frank, the singer, we've been friends since we were like zero. I've never not known him. And he was like this dude who, like, he's like one of the best drummers I've ever known, like guitar player, best guitar player I've ever known. Like, he's phenomenal. And it was just like, we ended up doing a couple of shows with his other band, and then his band split up, and we were just like, oh, should we just start this band? And we were like, yeah, okay, let's just do it. And our favorite band back then was like iMonkey, sort of stuff, and like Black Flag and sort of like old school sort of stuff, Sabbath and all that. And we were just like, fuck it, let's just make a band which is just noisy as fuck and no one will like. Like, we never wanted anyone to like us. We just was like, just fucking, just didn't care. So we just did that. And like, it was really weird because like, we were practicing and our friend used to be in this band called Cuban 8, and it was like a industrial band, which like did quite well. And he'd come back from tour and he just walked past the practice room and he was like, oh, fuck, like Dave, our old manager, Dave would love this. And he came from Corby, but he lived in London. So we ended up, he put us on a show in London and he was like, right, I'm going to manage you. And that was it, basically. And it sort of, it took like 4 or 5 years for us to get to like starting to do good shows. But like, I remember him saying to us, like, what do you want to do? And we were like, tour. And he said, right, well, there's two, he went and bought us two tents. And he was like, right, fuck off and don't fucking complain to me. And like, I'm just gonna, like, and he just got us, we were just out all the time, just playing shows, sleeping in tents in like December, you know, just not with nothing, like £2 a day we'd have each, you know, and that's all we did for like 4 or 5 years of just, and that if we would complain, they'd be like, you've got to do it this way, you're not, you've got to learn your craft, basically. And then it just sort of, we got on one tour and then the other, and then it just went crazy, and that was it.
You've toured with some amazing bands as well. Like, you look at some of the bands that you've toured with: Rammstein, Slipknot, Slayer. Like, amazing. Like, how was that?
Yeah, just nuts. It's just like, it's a bit weird. We're like, it's so weird to like, because we're speed on. It's like we still got that sort of attitude. Is we don't really care like about that sort of stuff. So it's like, it was really weird, I think, for the guys in Slipknot, because like we walked into the like this arena and like no one knew what they looked like back then. It was quite a strange time. The second record, I think, was just about to come out, so it was like we went into the room and like the clown just fucking threw his stuff and told us to get out, and we were like, oh fuck you then, we don't give a fuck. So sort of went backstage and stuff, played the show, like the first show we did, and like we flew home because it was like alternating sort of weekends. We'd go out and just like do these shows with them in Europe. And then like one day their tour manager was like, oh yeah, is it, I can't remember the clown's name. Is it Sean?
Sean.
Went, oh, Sean can, do you want to come? Like Sean wants you to be at the side of the stage. And we were like, tell him to fuck off. Don't give a fuck. And like we stood there, we watched him and we were like, yeah, they're all right. And sort of just fucked off. And after that, Corey just sort of loved us. And we just got on with him like a house on fire, because it was really, it's really strange with them guys because they come from fuck all as well. And so did we.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We got on really, really well, to be honest with you. And it was awesome. We did like, I can't remember, like 5 or 6 shows, I think we did with them. But then
That was an arena tour, you said?
Yeah, it's like huge places. We did that, and then like we did like some shows, quite a few shows with Murder Dolls out in America. We did a couple of them out there, and we did some stuff with, I can't remember the other band Corey was in. My head's gone. What's it
Stone
called?
Sour.
Stone Sour. We did quite a lot of stuff for them. So like we sort of kept in contact with them quite a lot. And like a couple of years ago, I sort of messaged Corey out the blue, and he was like, no way. And like started speaking to him, which is quite weird, in a weird, strange way. But yeah, I mean, it's like, it's really weird because like bands like that, you think, oh, we're never going to get on with them. And we get on with them really well. And some of the bands you think you're going to get on with, they're fucking assholes. And it's just the weirdest. What we always thought is the bands what are quite big anyway are usually the coolest ones, and the ones what are sort of on a medium level before we get big are the ones who are rock stars, really.
Well, the ones who are getting a bit of a following and a bit of attention, and then they think, yeah.
That's the sort of bands who I've always sort of seemed to have had issues with.
Did it ever taint your view of anyone's music if they were kind of, you know, there's obviously a lot of bands you probably look up to, and if they turn out not to, you know, maybe they're not the nicest people, does that have an effect on the next time you listen to them and you think, oh, they're just twats?
I mean, luckily with us, it's like we never really toured with anyone who was, like, the only band who we toured with who I thought, they're fucking dickheads, was Mudvayne, you know, because they were just dickheads, you know, and it's like there's no other way of saying it. Like, they were just weird people. And like, we were on a European tour, we drove to Spain, and we got there, and we were like, where the fuck are they? It was like halfway through the tour. And the guy, the promoter came out and went, oh, they've just went home. And we were like, what?
What?
Like, we'd driven from, I think it was like from France to Spain. Luckily, we're like on a tour bus. So we were just like, what the fuck?
Mudvayne have gone home.
We just got to go home. Yeah, they just got home because they don't like Europe. They didn't like Europe, so they just went home.
What?
You know, it's just like, it's just insane.
I can only imagine driving all that way through Europe at, you know, getting psyched up through the gigs to be told Mudvayne have gone home.
Yeah. It's just that it was just nuts. And like, it's just, they were just weird. And I think, I don't know what the reason was they didn't like us. It's probably because we used to just take the piss out of them and stuff because we just thought they were really funny. Well, they're probably going, who are these sort of little young kids thinking they're the fuck, you know? Because we just didn't really care. It weren't our sort of kind of music, you know? But
we need them on the next episode. I'll get their say out with them.
Yeah, it's just, they were just a really strange bunch of dudes. I've never met anyone like it, you know? Too serious, I would say. They're too serious. They were so, well, like Slipknot, when we talked to them, they were just like, you know, it even blows my mind now how big they got, because they were just nutters, like just wreckheads, like nuts, honestly. But it was so weird when we were out with them, because we were like, why are all these dudes around them all the time? And it just, like, you realise it's like they've all got like a security guard.
Oh, really?
So, like, when they got too, like, fucked or whatever, like, they just pick him up and take him to the bus. Like, you've had enough.
God, that's when you know you've made it. I could have done with one of them at 2,000 Trees.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So Rammstein were a bit weird as well, but we ended up, like, we got kicked off that tour every day for Rammstein. But that was just our old fault of being idiots, but there we go.
Are you guys still quite wild now? Do you still kind of party hard when you are touring, or is it calmed down a lot?
Not, it has to a point, but Frank is still fucking nuts. Like, he's the one that you got to go, fucking come on. He just doesn't sleep on tour.
Oh, man.
He's nuts for it. Where, like, there'll be a point where I've got to go, oh, fuck, I've had enough. I need to go home or go back to the hotel. Where, like, the newer guy, like Andy and stuff, they're like, fuck, he's nuts. And I was like, I know. I've been in a bad with him forever.
Well, I think you normally hear people after 20 years have calmed down quite a bit, but he's keeping the spirit alive, yeah.
But it's like, that's the thing with us. It's always like, to me, it will never change, I don't think, with Speedhorn. It's always going to be that kind of sort of party kind of vibe.
Mm.
Because that's what we're like. So even when it's when you go away, you're going away. You're going away with the boys.
Lads holiday.
And it's always going to be like that, I think, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like the first proper big tour we did out in Europe. It was like 8 weeks long. And halfway through, I was like, I need to go bed. I need to just sleep, you know. And they're just all nuts, just up for it all the time. I can't do it. I've never really been like, there'll be a point where I'll go, I can't do it anymore. Where they're like, well, Frank is.
I can't even do like 4 pints in a pub anymore. I'm like, just, it's not worth it. Yeah. It's not worth the hangover the next day.
I think the last time we went out, I think I had 6 pints or something, and then I woke up in the morning, I felt like I'd been punched in the head repeatedly.
Yeah. It's weird, because if I do that at home, I'm knackered, but if I do it when I'm away, I'm fine. I don't know what it is. I sort of just deal with it and just get on with it. But I think it's having 5 other people going, come on, or it just happens. You just get to a venue, you go, oh, I can't, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing that again tonight. And then it just ends up happening. Without even realizing, you know, it's like one show, like on the last tour, Frank had like got really drunk, and I was sort of like sober, and I was just there, and I was like, I had a bit of a word with him. Sort of, we always have a bit of arguments anyway. I got on stage, I just got a crate of beer, and I just drunk the lot like through the gig. They were like, it was so funny because like you were so angry with him, that you got really pissed more than he was. And I was like, I know. But
if you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah, I was just like, fucking asshole. And I end up being as drunk as he is. But there we go. It's the way it is. Yeah. But, yeah.
So was the new album kind of wrapped up before everything kicked off with COVID-19? Or was it kind of, were you still putting the finishing touches on it?
No, the album was done this time last year. We've just been, because...
All right.
You know, like we had, because John had left, like we were sort of recording it, all the music was done, and then Frank and John went in, and then John sort of left or whatever happened there. So then we had to get Dan in, and then we recorded the vocals and stuff. So it's been mixed and mastered for about 4 months now, but we were going sort of through, because it was usually me who was sort of managing the band, but I didn't want to do that anymore. I wanted to sort of just be a band member. So we've got a guy in called Darren Sadler, who's managing us now. He used to be the editor of Krang magazine and Rock Sound and Metal Hammer as well. So he's sort of come in, and things are looking, it's just a lot better because I don't have to deal with it. He's got amazing ideas because he's done it all before, where with me, it was sort of, I was just blagging a lot of it. Because I was like, right, we'll just get on with it and just do it. Luckily enough, like, I know a lot of people what helped me out along the way, but there was a point where I was like, right, this record, I just want it done properly. It's as good as it can possibly be. Because, I mean, it's like, with the last record, it was just me going, fuck, what have I got to do? Just ringing people going, how do I do this? Like, well, you know, and they were like, right, do it like this. And we still sold, I think, like, on our own, so close to 10,000 records, that last record.
I love that album as well. I don't know, it always feels like, I think each Rage and Speedrun album has that kind of core sound, but there's always something slightly different, and that there's huge like Black Sabbath vibes on that, on Lost Rituals. Oh, I love it. And I saw an interview with Frank recently, I think, was it Metal Hammer or something I saw online? He was talking about how the new album kind of sounds most like We'll Be Dead Tomorrow, which is my favorite as well, so I'm so excited.
It's definitely got a bit more of that sort of vibe to it, definitely. I think this is a really good record, to be fair. It's amazing, and it's really good because when Dave came in on guitar, obviously, like, we just knew that he was a really good guitar player, because we've known him for years, and he jumped in, played guitar when we did some CKY shows 2 years ago in Ireland, and we were like, fuck, his guitar sounds like our guitar sound used to sound. That sounds amazing. And then like Jay left, and I was like, right, we need to get Dave in now. Like, because after them two shows we did with Dave, I instantly was like, Frank wants Dave in the band. I just knew straight away, you know, it was that sort of thing. And I was like, oh, fucking hell. So when Jay left, I instantly knew that would be the person we wanted in the band, because he just fits in really well. So like, he just, when we started writing stuff, he was bang on it. You know, it was great, especially with me and Frank, because we work so sort of, right, this is the riff, right, go, and we're in, and we're playing the riff, and some people are like, well, what's going on? And like, we're just like that. That's how we are.
I was going to say, because obviously the speed on sound is quite an organic sound.
Yeah, now, yeah.
Is it just getting together and jamming, or is it someone recording parts and emailing it over? Or
fucking hell, if I said to Frank, you've got to do a Zoom meeting, he'd be like, what the fuck are you on about? I don't even know what that is. You know, he's so old school in that way. It's like, we all get together, we all write the song.
Yeah.
That's how we do it, you know.
And it's always been that way, or?
Yeah, it's never been. Like the first couple of practices, we'd go in and we'd be like, right, has anyone got any riffs? You know, and it's like, nah, I ain't got, all right, well, let's go and have a beer and we'll come back and we'll start. And that's, it's always been the way it's been. I couldn't imagine Speedrun being any different. I mean, like, it's different now when we sort of record a riff on a phone and send it to each other. What do you think of that? But like, even like some riffs where we'll go, nah, that doesn't sound right, we'll get in a rehearsal and play it, and we're like, oh yeah, that sounds awesome. You know, but like, it's always been the same with us. It's like, we always write 10 songs and they'll be the 10 songs that are on the album. We never go, oh, we need to write 20 songs. We're like, fuck that. Like, we'll write just 10 really good songs, and it'll go backwards and forward for a while, and things will change and stuff. And then because now we record with Russ Russell, like we'll go in and things change constantly with Russ, you know. Like we'll come in and I'll be like, what's that bit on that guitar? I changed that last night, you know, because he's just, he just knows our, the way we work. We just sort of live, let him have free rein on it, really. And he just, it sounds amazing. It's the best sounding record we've ever done. It just sounds massive. Nice.
Snakebite does sound, I was saying to Kieran just before we came on, it's just, it's got this like, just this, that classic like speed horn, like thickness. And it just, it's got so much drive. It just doesn't stop.
Yeah. That's just, I think that's it. That it sounds like a bunch of guys jamming in a room, doesn't it?
I think that's what, I think that's the thing with speedhorn. It's like what puts us away from everybody else, like in like every scene. It's like there's no, I don't think there's anyone who sounds like us.
Yeah,
to be honest with you, because we've got that sort of that punky sort of fuck you kind of attitude, and just like just the way we, like, I can't even think of another band that sounds like us, to be fair. You know, which is, it's quite cool in a way, you know. It's nice to be like, it's so weird, like when you go, when you play shows and people go, yeah, you're legends now, you're legends. And I was like, what are you on about? Because to me, I don't even think about stuff like that. Like play, like, you know, like when we play festivals or like even back in the day when we got to a bigger size, all of us would still be out in the crowd just having a beer.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what are you doing back here? I was like, well, to me, I'm just a normal person playing in a band. Like, that's all that is, you know. Yeah. And I think some people forget that. But that's, yeah, it's got, I don't think if we couldn't write riffs, songs like we're writing, we wouldn't do it, you know. Like, especially with all the stuff what happened with Frank and with John and Jane Dave leaving. And then Frank was really ill, like life-threatening illness a couple of years ago. So like it was quite hard because it was sort of me sort of holding everything together going, nah, we're gonna carry on. Like when Frank got better and we knew it was gonna be all right, then we were like, right, here we go, we're back on again, we're all good.
I was just gonna say, you had quite a big gap, didn't you? Was it from, was it 2008 to 2014?
Yeah,
after you kind of said, oh, we're gonna kind of call it a day, and then you all got back together for was it reunion shows before you did Lost Ritual?
Yeah, yeah.
How was that, kind of that space in between? Was that, were you doing other things in music or were you just starting your business?
Well, I worked in a theatre for a while and then just started a business. And just, I didn't see anybody from the band because I live in Wales as well. I didn't really go home. I just needed some time away from everybody. Yeah. It was so sort of intense, then 10 or so years from like going from like enough to playing shows constantly to being like quite a biggish band to like then everything started to go to bit to shit. And I was just like, I just need a, and I was in Viking Skull as well, like an offshoot of Speedhorn, which we're doing all right. And I just needed a break. I think I was literally having a mental breakdown at one point because I was like, all I've done since I was 18 was just play in a band. I moved to Cardiff and I weren't really here for 4 years. I was just on tour constantly, you know, and I was just like, I just need a break from it all. So I've just sort of got a normal job and I was like, I'm not touring again, put all my drums away. And that was it. Like, I was like, I've had enough, really. And then I started a little band in Cardiff and stuff, but it was just, that was it for me. And then I started tour managing bands and stuff. And it was bands like While She Sleeps, in like Buried Tomorrow and stuff like that, who end up being quite good friends with. They were always like, get Speedhorn back together. We've got to do it. Like, come on. And I was like, nah, never. And I sort of started speaking to Frank again. I said, oh, what about doing it? And he was like, fuck yeah, I'm well up for it. And I was like, okay.
It's got to be a good feeling after, you know, having a break to hear people still want more from you.
Well, because Frank left the band after the third record, I never wanted to do the band again without Frank not being there, because it's just never right without him. You know, I love Kev, who did the like Before the Sea and stuff. He's one of my best friends, but like, it just wasn't right. It didn't sound like Speedhorn without Frank being there.
Yeah.
So it was just, if when Frank said yeah, and like the other guys, we didn't really ask Darren, our first bass player, because he's got like a lot of people just went and got normal jobs after they left the band, to be fair. And like Gareth, the other guitarist, he lives in Stockholm in Sweden, so there was just no way he could come in and do it. So Jay and Dave, who was on the fourth record, like wanted to do it, so we just did it that way for a while. But I mean, it's hard being in a band which is sort of like full time, you know, people still have to work to a point, you know, people have kids and mortgages and all that sort of stuff. So it's like, I mean, that's like the lucky thing with the people who are in the band now, all self-employed. So we can sort of come and go when we want to, really, to a point. But it is hard. It's always been hard being in a band. People don't realise how sort of you've got to put your life on hold to do it, you know.
But, do you still feel the same amount of love from Speedhorn fans? Because obviously Lost Ritual was fan funded, wasn't it?
Yeah, we did really well with that. Yeah,
it must be nice to know that there's still people, you know, after these 22 years, who are still loving this and just want to hear more music from you guys.
It's quite weird now, more because there's younger people coming to the gigs now, you know, which is awesome, you know. Like, it's so weird for me, like, especially, well, for me and Frank, I think, when people go, oh, yeah, your band's been going for that long. Because for me and him, we don't feel any different. We're still exactly the same as we sort of were. So I'm like, we've been going for that long. And it's quite weird, you know. And when Dan came in on vocals, when we did that sort of independent venue tour, he said to me, he goes, have you noticed how many shirts are around all the time? And I was like, no. He's like, look tonight when the show opened, when the venue opens. And I was like, fuck, there's so many shirts. It's just fanatical about us. It's insane. You know, and like people, a weird thing for me is when people know my name, you know, you come up and like talk about something when you were like 19. Do you remember that? I'm like, fucking hell. Like, I can't even remember what I did yesterday. No mind, like, but it's awesome. I think like fans are still there and, you know, it seems to me that the fan base is growing again. So it's, I mean, it's quite cool, really, to think that you can still go out and play to like 400 or 500 people a night, you know, and it's still doing really well. And I think things are going to change a bit now. We've got a manager because he knows how to just do things a bit better, you know, because it was all just DIY, us doing it all ourselves. But it was good because, you know, like, to be fair, we have more money doing it that way than we ever did on a major label and doing stuff what we've done before. It's like we were paying ourselves some money and all that sort of stuff, which we never really had, even though we were doing so well before. We had nothing, you know. It was one of them typical things of signing a record deal when you were young to a major label and going, oh, fuck. Like, you know, or your manager taking a lot of it or whatever. We didn't have any of that, which is cool.
It's been a big shift, hasn't there, really, over the last, I don't know, 5-10 years to crowdfunding, you know, whether it's a good or bad thing. But I mean, I like it. I think it's great. You know, I've put money down for quite a few albums, but I really like it. I think it's a nice way to kind of, bit of a cheesy term, but connect with the band, really, and
definitely,
you know, feel involved with the making of the album. And obviously it's nice to contribute to what they're doing and see the end result.
Yeah, well, it was all to do like with me. It's because I worked a lot with Ginger from Wild Hearts.
Oh yeah,
but, like, he did really well with his pledge campaign, and I knew his manager quite like really well, and I sort of just messaged him going, "What do you think? Do you think we could do this?" And he was like, 100%, you could do this like easily." And we went over like our target, and it carried on and on and on, and we got to do exactly what we wanted to do in the like. You know, we did exactly what we wanted to do. We had a press agent. We did all of it properly, you know. And it's like we've got our own label now. It's all coming out on our own label this time.
Nice.
We've got a good distributor now and stuff like that. So it's quite cool to think that you've got your own record label.
Yeah, and you've done it all off your own back.
Because, like, we had, like especially for like this record, we had, like, quite a few record labels sort of coming in asking. Decent sort of size record labels, and I was speaking to Darren about it, and Darren was like, why give it to them? They're gonna give you advance. And he sort of, we were looking at the advance, and Darren said, yeah, but you'll make that in a week. That's what they're going to give you. Yeah. when you do it all yourself. Like, don't be stupid. Like, we'll do it this way. And I was like, okay, you know. So it's just more exciting, and it's quite cool. If we ever see other bands, what we like, who are smaller, we can probably put it out on our label. You know, it's like, you've got to just be a bit more business savvy, I think, with that kind of stuff now.
Mm.
And if you can do it that way, it's the best way, really.
I was just going to ask, is the artwork for the new album sorted? Because the Lost Ritual one, was it Richie Beckett who did that?
No, it was Dominic Saul. He'd done it.
Oh, I love Richie, that's like one of my favourite metal album covers. Oh, just, it's great. It's so good.
Well, no, Richie Beckett's my best mate, weirdly enough.
Right, okay. Why did I say that?
Yeah, he's a really... And he was going to come in and do the new record, but when he heard the record and stuff, and he was like, my stuff's just not right for this record. And I was like, yeah, I think you're probably right, because it's more sort of like hard-hitting, sort of punkier kind of attitude. He was like, my artwork wouldn't fit for this.
Yeah.
So sort of we had to go back to the drawing board, because I've been wanting Richie to do something for us for a long time. So, he's going to do some sort of artwork for us down the line. Mm. But it's the artwork's all done basically now. So everything's sort of in the bag, ready to go to a point. But it's quite different for us. It's still, it's cool. It's really cool. But we've had women on the front of our records twice now, three times. Like, and the thing is with us is I never class us as like a stoner rock band. You know, I'm like, nah, fuck that. I don't want that anymore. I want something more sort of menacing and stuff. So yeah, it's quite simple, but it's really cool, you know.
I always remember being like 15 or whatever it was and going to like, you know, HMV, and I remember seeing that first album cover with what, John looking like he's about to smash the camera.
Yeah.
And you just knew, like, oh my God. I was just like, because obviously this is a time, we talk about this in the kind of very first episode, where you kind of, you know, you had to go on word of mouth and kind of look things up yourself. And it was one of those albums that you just saw the album cover and you're just like, yeah, this is going to proper kick off as soon as I put it on.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because going back to Slipknot as well, in the first episode we did, we were having a bit of a chat about new metal, weren't we? And we were saying that for both of us, we were quite, probably about 15 when Slipknot self-titled came out.
Yeah.
And, you know, our taste hadn't quite developed. So I think, I don't know if it's the same for you, Graham, but to us, you know, Blink-182 was heavy music and The Offspring was heavy music. Yeah. And we heard that and we're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah,
and I remember a similar thing happened with Speedhorn, and I don't mean this in the wrong way, but I remember hearing it the first time being like, what the hell am I listening to?
Yeah.
And then 12 months later, once you've gotten to a bit more heavy music, you're like, fucking hell, this is solid. This is really cool.
Yeah.
It's quite weird.
Quite funny.
Well, like when it was like people always, it's so funny, like in Metal Hammer and stuff, how they put us in like this new metal category thing sometimes.
Yeah.
And you just like, I used to get really pissed off about it, but like, I think to myself, but the thing is like, there was no bands like us back then, or like this hardcore thing, what happened. Like, there was nothing like that when we were kids. And when we started, it was like fucking shit. Like, they were just old people playing, like trying to be new metal, if you know what I mean. It was like this band built of this, and it was just like, fucking hell, who are these dick? And there was nothing like, so we just got sort of pigeonholed in with all these sort of new metal bands, because obviously our manager was like, right, you're playing with Static X fucking down London. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. But then it was like, but then he was always saying, look, do you want to just stay like Iron Monkey playing to no fucker, or do you want to do well, you know? And that was, so in a weird way, it was like us and Woolhaven, what were like them bands, what were like the heavier kind of bands, really. They weren't like what just sounded a little bit different. Because, like, it was so weird for me, because I went to see Deftones on Around the Fair record, and Woolhaven supported them, and then, like, 2 years later, we got to support them. And if it weren't for, I honestly think, because if it weren't through us seeing Woolhaven, me, John, and Tony, Speedon would have never really have happened. Because it was like that one gig. I just remember Grady coming out and just shouting in the mic, and then it all just kicked in, and I was like, it gives me goosebumps now. And I was just like, holy fuck, like, what is this band? Yeah. Who are they? Because, like, they were sort of milling around on stage in this massive venue. Well, a story or something. And then, like, I was like, oh, they must be their techs. And just they just turned around and just started a song. And I was just like, that's the band I want to be. Like, because yeah. before that, we were more like a grungy kind of band, right. me and John and Tony were. And I was like, right, that's what we want to do. You know, it was quite weird to think that. And I remember going home and going, right, John, can you scream? And he just shouted. And I was like, holy shit. Like, this is amazing. And that was it. Like, we just went from there. It was just, yeah. It's quite.
Do you still listen to much kind of modern? Do you keep up with metal where it is now, or anyone in the British scene? Or
I mean, like, I sort of do, but I don't. You know, like it's. I did do for a long time because obviously I was out. I was tour managing bands and doing that sort of stuff. But I mean, I don't sit at home listening to metal anymore because, well, I mean, unless it's something amazing, which new, and I'll go, oh, that's amazing. But like, I mean, it was, I sort of started tour managing a lot of sort of pop punk bands for what, like Milk Teeth, I tour managed them for like 4 years.
Yeah,
cool.
And then I got on tour with all them sort of guys, like with Puppy and stuff like that, which I think Puppy are amazing. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're so good. It's like, they're sort of like Weezer mixed with like stoner rock. They're so good. Like with like metal riffs. And they're so that good.
Sounds crackers.
Yeah, they're really good. So it's sort of, yeah, it's, so I got into that sort, not got into it, but I was in that sort of scene for quite a while.
Yeah.
And just hanging out with them and like Creeper and stuff like that. So I sort of, I got into that weirdly enough because I think I was just around it all the time. I just thought to myself, I'm just going to be into this. But yeah, it was quite, oh, hello. It's got given a beer.
Oh, man. Look, I'm well, Joe.
Lovely one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've got into that, but I don't really listen to metal or anything anymore, yeah. really. But I think it was, but if there's a band what I see and I go, fuck, they're amazing, I'll go fucking mad on him for a while. But I can't even really think of a heavy band what I've listened to and I quite like, to be fair.
I'm terrible for that though. If someone says to me, what music do you listen to? Yeah. I just draw a blank. I don't know, AFI
stuff.
Yeah, I just got into like stuff like that for a while, and like bands like a band called Nervous. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, and they're like, it's really weird for me because like I remember seeing them and I'm going, oh fucking hell, like namby pamby fucking shit. And then like I ended up being out with them, they were supported Milk Teeth, and they're like the biggest metalheads ever. Like, you're going to this metal bar and they'd just be like, wah! Like, knew every song. And I'd be like, holy fuck. And they were like well into like death metal and stuff, and then played like this really sort of nice, chilled out music. I was like, how did that work?
That's me and Kieran, isn't it? We love a bit of smooth FM.
Oh, I love a bit of smooth.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing is with me is because I'm an old guy, old fucker, like, I grew up on Britpop and stuff like that. And the last gig I went to was to see Supergrass in London.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Because it's like, but I still love like heavy music, but it's just got to be good for me to like it, really.
Mm.
I think it's good though. There's sometimes this thing where kind of, I think some people think that a lot of people listen to metal and punk are very kind of narrow-minded. And there's this thing about like, you know, you only listen to this kind of thing and you never try anything else. I don't know. The people I know, that's just not true at all. And everyone likes all kinds of stuff. It's not representative.
It's not that uncommon for me and my wife to sing Celine Dion in the car together on the way to work.
Yeah,
man. I mean, when we go on tour, it's just all 80s pop in the van.
Nice.
Or something like that. Because it's just like, the last thing I want to be doing is playing heavy music, getting into the van and listening to heavy music. Yeah. You know, it's just like, I think it's just not me. It's not, definitely not me anymore. I fucking love playing it. Like, I always, like, my record collection's all metal, realistically. But, like, yeah, it's just, I can't sit at home and just fucking listen to it.
I'd love to pull up at the traffic lights and see the Raging Speedo on tour van next to me watching Foreigner or The Cars or something.
It's so funny.
Tears for Fears.
Yeah, that's the sort of shit we have on. I remember like we did like this mix thing for like a festival before we went on, and it was just all that. And I was like, fuck, I think it was like Bloodstock, and I was like, everyone's gonna hate it, sort of laughing. And like all I could hear was the crowd singing every song, and I was like, there you go, just says it all, done it to me. Yeah. Like, but even like even festivals now, I can't take too much of like, I'll go, but then it's like the band's what I want to see, but then usually I just can't handle being like at festivals anymore.
I think it's standing up. I don't think it's necessarily the beer or anything like that. It's just being stood up.
Yeah. Remember when you used to take the piss out of like all seater gigs though? I think I thought it was like the dumbest shit at the time, but looking back on it, I'm pretty chuffed. I went to see Spice Girls back in
God,
I don't know when it was. My sister wanted to go. Yeah, my sister was a massive fan.
Oh yeah, my sister wanted to go.
Yeah, my imaginary sister was a massive fan. And and we went, and I remember thinking, oh man, like an all seater gig, like just seems, even then when I was young, seems so lame. And now it's like, oh man, I'd love to sit down for like 2 hours. Yeah.
Looking up at the nosebleeds, like, God damn it, I wish I was up there.
Actually, I told a lie. The last gig I went to see was Napalm Death, which they were fucking awesome.
Nice,
fucking
wicked.
But like, I've known them guys for years, and they were playing in Cardiff, and I was like, I just want to go. I haven't seen him for so long, and they were amazing, to be fair.
Barney's such a legend.
Man, like they're like 50, you know, and like still smashing it out. I think that's amazing, to be fair. They were so good. Couldn't believe how good they were. But yeah, they were awesome. And yeah, some other shit, but I hate God played with him, which they were awesome. But then after a while, I always think to myself, like, why do bands take up the same sort of bands all the time? The last thing I want to do is sit and listen to death metal or grindcore for 4 hours. I'd rather it be a little bit different. You know?
Did you hear about, I think, I'm sure, what there was a recent episode of Life in the Stocks, the podcast, and Barney was on there, and he was talking about once they got accidentally booked onto a Korean pop festival. And it's a proper good story. It's worth a listen to it, but... He talks about like, you know, the manager was like, should we cancel it? Should we cancel it? He's like, no, we're going to go out and do it. And apparently everyone loved it. And they were like the only, so it was just all like pop. Yeah.
You won't get Mudvayne doing that.
Yeah.
I remember like I was talking to Chris from Funeral for a Friend. And he was saying to me, he was like, oh yeah, like we got booked for this festival in Europe, turned up, and it was just all death metal bands. He goes, and we're there going,
wow,
fuck, everyone's gonna hate us.
Start playing Oblivion, and everyone's like, what? Like,
oh mate, they're gonna fucking hate us.
Like, I can't imagine what that would feel like to walk out onto a stage onto a massive crowd. Just think, right, yeah, here we go.
It was a bit like that. We did a tour with Niall in the States, and it was a little bit like that.
It wasn't good for us.
It was brutal. But like, it was so funny. They'd have like these curtains that would sort of like come apart when the bands would play. So they'd just start like lead soloing and like be like these dudes like doing windmills. And we were just like, we'd go on and we'd just have like feedback on like looking like skater kids, and you could just, people just like, honest to God, like had like fucking death threats and everything. So funny. But it was because it was like Nile, Hypocrisy, Decapitated, it was all them sort of brutal metal, and it was just us just going, none of us had long hair, all like sort of caps on, like It was so, like, Harris was wearing, like, a Taken Back Sunday t-shirt.
Oh, God.
And they just fucking hated us, you know? It's just, like, it's so funny.
Well, talking of support bands, so we have a question from David Pope, who wants to know, as a fellow Corby band, any chance of Siderian opening for you next time you play your hometown? And also, actual question, what was your favourite Northants venue back in the day?
Northampton venue? There weren't really many. Well, when we still not, to be fair, we around that area, which is quite sad, like, especially in Corby and Kettering, there's nothing. You had to play like small bars and stuff. There was a really good one in Corby called Zombie Hut, which our friends owned. And that sort of, it's that typical thing in a small town, is you get one awesome venue, you get really cool bands playing, and then, you know, someone has an argument with someone else, the guy who owned it, the guy promoter, and it all implodes. And then, like, the guy just goes, I'll tell you what, it's fucking too much for me. And they just close. And it's just, it's really sad, you know. But that was a cool venue. There's not really many venues in Northamptonshire, to be honest.
I don't think I've been to Corby, but I have been to Kettering. And I remember there was, well, yeah, there wasn't much there. I definitely didn't see any music venues.
there was a place there called the Sawyer's Arms, which was like, it was all right. It was a bit shit. But like, we'd sort of play, there was a place called the Old Market Inn, like a bar. And like, we'd just play there quite a lot. But when to be fair, Speedon didn't really play Northampton that much, because there was nowhere to play.
Yeah.
You know, it was like in Corby, we'd play a place called The Rock. And that was like, our guitarist is local, you know, and there's just nothing, there was just nowhere to play at all in Northampton, in Corby and Kettering. And we didn't really play Northampton at all.
How did that affect you guys, like, growing up then? Because a lot of people, obviously, when you kind of say, oh, what got you into a band? A lot of people are like, well, you know, we went and saw quite a lot of people doing it in our area. Was that good or bad that you weren't kind of getting these bands coming to your town?
We had quite a decent scene, like, back in when I was younger. Like, there was some cool bands going, and there was like a few little venues around. There was one in Kettering, which was underneath the train station, which held about 50 people, you know. And there was one in Corby, I can't remember the name of it, which I never went to. But that was quite a sort of an alternative scene, but I never went to it. But they weren't really much at all. Like, yeah, there was nothing really. So I don't know how. It was more people just sort of work, just sending your CDs or giving, like, sort of swapping around. They weren't much of a place to play, really, when I was growing up, when I got into music anyway. But yeah, everyone sort of just playing like local bars or pubs or something like that. But yeah, it was quite shit, to be honest with you. But the minute, like, when I was younger, when you got to fucking drive, get the fuck out of there, then you could go to London or like Leicester or somewhere like that, and there'd be always some cool bands on, you know. But like, I'm honest to God, like, the only two bands I've seen, proper bands I actually seen before we started Speedrun, really, was like was Silverchair, which is like, and Deftones. That was because like I had to go to London, you know, and I had fuck all money, like, you know. I mean, it's quite highly documented, but like we all come from not much, really, you know. Like, we all come from, like, well, I come from a council estate, you know. Like, I had nothing, so it was hard for me to do anything, you know. I mean, like, my first drum kit was stolen. My uncle bought me it, and it like took me down this dirty alley, you know. Honest to God, it's like, honestly, I remember saying to my dad, oh, I want a drum kit. My dad was like, I ain't buying you a drum kit, because you'll just throw it in the corner and not fucking play on it. I was like, oh, please, like, and it was just like near Christmas, my uncle came down and he said, like, get in the car. I've got a surprise for you. I was like, oh. Got in the car, took me down this like really dodgy alleyway, like this, knocked on this garage door, and this garage door opened, and he was like, will that do you? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, right, you're not allowed to fucking play it out. Got it and just like left. Oh, man. But if it weren't through him, I would have never played drums, you know. Some poor fucker lost their drum kit, but I ended up giving me one. Which
that could be another successful band that never came to fruition.
We were terrible like that, like when we were younger, though, because we come from that sort of town of like nothing. We had nothing. Like, when we were on tour, we just had to sort of survive in that way of just fucking nicking everything. And it's so weird for me now, when, especially when I started touring, tour managing or like driving bands. And like, it always seemed to me like all these hardcore kids or whatever, they all just came from really rich families, which is like, I don't really, but like, they had everything. Like, and I'd be like, fuck, like, I wish we never had that. We had to work our asses off to get where we got, which I'm not saying, like, if you come from a privileged family. That's awesome. But it just seemed to me like, yeah, I've got this guitar, and it'd be like fucking SG or something. I'd be like, fucking hell. Like, I remember like when we were touring, because we had no money, I'd have to set fire to my drum skins to make him not have massive dips in him, because we just had no money to buy new ones. But yeah, it was nuts, like, back then. Like, but yeah, there was no venues at all, really. So,
well, there you go, David.
Yeah.
So the question is, there aren't any.
Yeah.
Exactly. Kieran, do you have a last question that you
one
you
last ask question?
Gordon? I think we've taken up a good bit of Gordon's time here. Is there anything you want to wrap up on?
Well, we obviously, as we said, the podcast is about our kind of mundane lives as a 30-something metal fan. We want to know, what's the most boring adult thing that you've done recently?
The most boring thing? Oh, my God. My life is just constantly boring at the minute.
It's my life.
Well, I sanded down my window frame and painted it yesterday, which was...
Wow, yeah, that's pretty grown up.
That's the answer we were looking for.
Like, boring, you know? Like, there's not much boring than that, to be honest with you.
Well, if you ever fancy doing any glossing and you're around our way, give us a shout.
I've got so much. Like, our house is sort of quite a biggish house, and it's fucking like every day I just look at it going, I'm terrible. It's usually my wife's like, just don't look at it. Just don't look. I'm like, oh, look, that needs done. And she's like, fuck. Every day she's just like, don't. Just go through the day without taking something out.
I think I'm the opposite. I look at it, and then I look at it again the next day, and then I keep looking at it. And then I just realised that that's all I'm going to do, is I'm just going to look at it until it falls apart or someone else does it.
When did we go into lockdown? Like 3 months ago? Yeah. We just starting to... I was just looking at it the other day going, I've got to do something before we come out. Just imagine I go on about stuff and then never do it. I'm just like...
Yeah. When we moved into this place, you get the survey, don't you? And everything's like, it makes just everything look terrible, like doom and gloom. Like, it sounds like everything's falling apart. And we've been in here like a year and a half now, and I've just told Kieran we're getting a barbecue stand built. I'm not addressing like any structural problems or anything serious that was on the survey. I'm just gonna have a barbecue stand. That'll fix everything.
All that damp and that rot that you've got. Never mind that. I'm gonna have a barbecue.
I think when you have a kid as well, you sort of don't even really look at stuff like that anymore.
No, yeah. I don't have time.
Nah, you don't. Well, you know, like, you'll get something done and they'll just wreck it anyway. So you might as well just leave.
It's a really good excuse to have a kid. If you can't be bothered doing any DIY, just get a kid and go, well, they're going to wreck it anyway. So
the most brutal thing she does is, like, if I say no to her, she'll come into the front room. That's where, like, all the CDs and records are. And she'll just start pulling them out. And I'm just there going... And she looks at me laughing, or she'll take CDs out and put them in different cases. And I'll be like,
oh, no.
And she knows what she's doing. She just looks at me and laughs at me. I'm like,
that's brutal.
It's brutal.
Especially for one of those people that categorizes everything into alphabetical order or whatever.
Oh, yeah. It was until she started throwing it all around. And I just put it back. Well, I did the other day, but then she started to pull them out again. So I don't really care about the CDs. It's more the vinyl, you know. If she wrecks that, then I'm not happy about it. Well, she hasn't. She hasn't yet, but there'll be a point where she probably does. But that's when you'll see Gordon's went into a mental home for losing his mind.
Cool. Well, thank you again for coming to talk to us. It's been really cool to chat to you.
Awesome. Thank you. If you ever want to come to any shows or anything, let us know if it's close to you guys.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hopefully once lockdown's lifted, we'll see you back on the road. Well, until then, check out Snakebite.
Thanks again for coming on.
No worries. Take care of yourself.
Cheers, Gordon. Take care, mate.
You're doing bad.
Cheers, Gordon. Thanks.
And you. Bye-bye. Bye.
So that was Gordon Morrison, drummer for UK metal legends Raging Speedhorn. Super interesting guy. Some really cool stories that we weren't expecting to hear. But it's great to talk to him. So we're not sure what's happening with the new album yet, but the new track Snakebite is on YouTube now, so check that out.
Such a big tune. And thank you for listening as well. If you enjoyed this podcast, as always, if you know anyone, friends or family, who'd be into this, give them a link and pass it on. Don't forget to
check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and most recently, Twitter. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Bye, Graham.
See you later, Kieran. Have a good
goodbye.
Week. Take care. Kind regards.
See you later.